A Mennonite blogger I sometimes follow wrote this week, "I don't really know what sin is, but I suspect behaving in ways that are the opposite of love define it well." Jeremy set us up on our first Snakes and Ladders Sunday with the notion that the traditional seven deadly sins have been understood as misdirected love or an excess of what are natural and even healthy human desires and passions. When those desires take us away from loving God and loving our neighbors as we love ourselves, we need to be reoriented. It can be helpful to remind ourselves of how close these vices can be to perfectly natural inclinations, because we might not identify with the most extreme stories that can be told, but even our everyday decisions invite our discernment and thoughtful reflection on our motivations. I had to take a moment this week to think about how greed is different than gluttony, which we'll consider in 2 weeks. Helpfully, Jeff Cook writes that greed is not gluttony which indulges to the point of bursting. Greed, in many ways, couldn't care less about enjoying its spoils. Greed pursues accumulation. Greed is the desire to possess more than I need because of fear or idolatry. A fitting personification of greed is Ebenezer Scrooge, who sat alone at night with a single candle to light his cold bedroom. "Darkness is cheap," wrote Charles Dickens, and Scrooge liked it. I find it to be helpful to reflect on greed as the desire to possess more than I need, even if it can be challenging to answer, what is it that I really need? I get antsy when I hear the language of blessing applied to the things that we have, to say that I am blessed to have these things. Am I grateful that I have a home and convenient means of transportation and enough money to buy more books than I can possibly read in a lifetime? Yes, of course, I certainly enjoy these things. But do they give evidence that I am blessed by God? Or have I also simply stumbled into privilege and good real estate timing? What I see in Scripture is that blessing is not in the having, it's in the releasing. It's not in the acquiring, it's in the giving. The Apostle Paul in the book of Acts attributes a phrase to Jesus that isn't written in the four Gospels, but presumably was passed along in the community. Paul, who worked for his own keep as a missionary, said, "In all this I have given you an example that by such work we must support the weak, remembering the words of the Lord Jesus. For he himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" In the well-known "Do Not Worry" passage we just heard, God's presence is acknowledged in having just enough, not in having more and more and more. Hashtag blessed comes with having just enough, not the more you get. Strive for God's kingdom, Jesus says. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out. Now, Rick Powell and I had a brief conversation last week about the shadowy side of generosity. Apparently, Canadian author Louise Penny has a line in one of her books about the shadow cousins of virtues. Perhaps even things we name as virtues can be practiced in excess, or at least with less than virtuous motivations. Have you ever witnessed generosity that seemed to be more about the status of the giver than the interest of the receiver? Has the expectation of generosity ever been used to further injustice in the world for those who don't have material wealth to give? What is the history of generosity being used to keep colonial or racially motivated hierarchies in place, keeping the power of problem solving in the hands of those with the most cash? When might acts of generosity maintain divisions between people, between the so-called needy and the so-called fortunate, the exchange of money never bringing people into each other's lives? The shadow side of generosity could in fact be greed in disguise. Greed for status, for power, greed for freedom from guilt or the messiness of really getting involved in someone else's struggle. The true virtue of generosity is courageous. Generosity is all about risk-taking, letting go of the money that you've earned, time that you can't get back, vulnerability that someone else could take for granted. Greed keeps control, but generosity doesn't get to set all of the rules. If greed hoards just in case, generosity takes a risk and lets go and finds a blessing in those open hands. Generosity asks us to take a risk for the sake of our neighbor. Isn't it this that causes us to marvel at the generosity and hospitality of those who have little material wealth? It is recognizable when generosity involves genuine risk-taking. And somehow the more we have, the harder it is to imagine living like that. What risk would you challenge yourself to take to be generous? What blessing do you think that risk and release might give? I'm going to read you a story, and I encourage you this week to tell your own story of generosity, risk, and blessing. This is The Quilt Maker's Gift by Jeff Brumbo and illustrated by Gail DeMarkin. And you'll only see a selection of the illustrations, so if you don't know this story, you may want to borrow it from me later. It's quite beautiful. So the quilt maker in this story made incredible quilts, and people lined up to try to buy them. But she told everyone, "I give my quilts to those who are poor or homeless. They are not for the rich." Now, at this time, there also lived a very powerful and greedy king who liked nothing better than to receive presents. The hundreds of thousands of beautiful gifts he got for Christmas and his birthday were never enough. So a law was passed that the king would celebrate his birthday twice a year. When that still wasn't enough, he ordered his soldiers to search the kingdom for those few people who had not yet given him a gift. Over the years, the king had come to own almost all of the prettiest things in the world. Throughout the castle, from top to bottom, in drawers and on shelves, in boxes and trunks and closets and sacks, all of the king's countless things were stashed. Things that shimmered and glittered and glowed, things whimsical and practical, things mysterious and magical. So many, many things that the king kept a list of all the lists of things he owned. And yet, with all of these marvelous treasures to enjoy, the king never smiled. He was not happy at all. "Somewhere there must be one beautiful thing that will finally make me happy," he was often heard to say, "and I will have it." One day, a soldier rushed into the palace with news about a magical quilt maker who lived in the mountains. The king stamped his foot. "And how is it that this person has never given me one of her quilts as a gift?" he demanded. "She only makes them for the poor, Your Majesty," the soldier replied, "and she will not sell them for any amount of money." "Well, we shall see about that," the king roared. "Bring me a horse and 1,000 soldiers." And they set off in search of the quilt maker. But when they arrived at her house, the quilt maker merely laughed. "My quilts are for the poor and needy, and I can easily see that you are neither." "I want one of those quilts," the king demanded. "It might be the one thing that will finally make me happy." The woman thought for a moment. "Make presents of everything you own," she said, "and then I'll make a quilt for you. With each gift that you give, I'll sew in another piece. When at last all your things are gone, your quilt will be finished." "Give away all of my wonderful treasures?" cried the king. "I don't give things away, I take them." And with that, he ordered his soldiers to seize the beautiful star quilt from the quilt maker. But when they rushed upon her, she tossed the quilt out the window, and a great gust of wind carried it up, up, and away. The king was now very angry. He marched the woman down through the town and up another mountain where he had his royal ironmakers shape a thick bracelet of iron. Then they chained her to a rock in the cave of a sleeping bear. Once more the king asked her for a quilt, and once more she refused. "Very well, then," the king replied, "I'll leave you here, and when the bear awakens, I'm sure he will make a very fine breakfast of you." Later, when the bear's eyes opened and he saw the woman in his cave, he stood on his mighty hind legs and gave a roar that rattled her bones. She looked up at him and sadly shook her head. "It's no wonder you're so grouchy," the quilt maker said. "You've nothing but rocks on which to rest your head at night. Bring me an armful of pine needles, and with my shawl, I'll make you a great big pillow." And this is what she did. No one had ever been so kind to the bear before, so he broke the iron bracelet and asked her to spend the night. Now, although the king was very good at being greedy, he was very bad at being mean. All that night, he could not sleep for thinking about the poor woman in the cave. "Oh my, what have I done?" he wailed. So he woke up his soldiers, and they all marched in their pajamas up to the cave to save her. But when they arrived, the king found the quilt maker and the bear having a breakfast of berries and honeys. Now, the king completely forgot about feeling sorry and became angry all over again. He ordered the royal island makers to build an island barely big enough for the woman to stand on her tiptoes. Once again, the king asked her for a quilt, and once again she said no. "Very well," the king replied. "Tonight, when you're too tired to stand and lie down to sleep, you'll drown." And the king left her alone on the tiny island. Shortly after he left, the quilt maker saw a sparrow flying across the great lake. A cold, fierce wind was blowing, and it did not look like the poor bird would make it to shore. The quilt maker called to him, and he stopped to rest on her shoulders. The poor, tired sparrow was shivering, so the woman quickly made him a coat from scraps of her purple vest. When he was warmed and the wind had stopped, the bird flew off. But he was very grateful to the quilt maker for what she had done. Soon, the sky darkened as the air filled with a huge cloud of sparrows. Thousands of wings beating together, they swooped down, lifted the woman in their little beaks, and carried her safely to shore. Again that night, the king could not sleep for thinking about the woman alone on the island. "Oh my, what have I done?" he moaned. So he woke up his sleepy soldiers again, and they marched in their pajamas down to the lake to set the woman free. But when they arrived, she was sitting on a tree limb, sewing tiny purple coats for all the sparrows. "I give up," the king shouted. "What must I do for you to give me a quilt?" "As I said," the woman answered, "give away all of the things you own, and I'll sew a quilt for you. And with each gift that you give, I'll add another piece to your quilt." "I can't do that," cried the king. "I love all of my wonderful, beautiful things." "But if they don't make you happy," the woman replied, "what good are they?" "That's true," the king sighed. And he thought about what she had said for a long, long time. So long that weeks went by. "Oh, all right," he finally muttered. "If I must give away my treasures, then I must." The king went to his castle and searched from top to bottom for something he could bear to give away. Frowning, he finally came out with a single marble. But the boy who received it smiled so brightly in return. The king went back for more things. Eventually, he brought out a pile of velvet coats and went about the town, giving them to people dressed only in rags. All were so pleased that they marched up and down the street in a grand parade. Still, the king did not smile. Next, the king fetched 100 waltzing blue Siamese cats and the dozen fish that were as clear as glass. Then the king ordered his merry-go-round with the real horses to be brought out. Children cried with delight and cartwheeled around him. And just the smallest of smiles began to show on the king's face. The king looked about him and saw the dancing and merrymaking and all the happiness his gifts had brought. A child took hold of his hand and pulled him into the dance. Now the king really smiled and even laughed out loud. "How can this be?" he cried. "How can I feel so happy about giving my things away? Bring everything out. Bring it all out at once." Meanwhile, the quilt maker kept her word and started making a special quilt for the king. With each gift that he gave, she added another piece to his quilt. So the king kept on giving and giving. When at last there was no one left in town who had not received something, the king decided to go out into the world and find others who might be in need of his gifts. But before he left, the king promised the quilt maker he would send a sparrow back to her each and every time he gave something away. Morning, noon, and night, the wagons rolled out of town, each piled high with the king's wonderful things. And for years and years, messenger sparrows flew to the quilt maker's windowsill as the king slowly emptied his wagons, trading his treasures for smiles around the world. On and on, the quilt maker worked, and piece by piece, the king's quilt grew more and more beautiful. Finally, one day, a weary sparrow flew into her window and perched on her needle. She knew then and there that it was the last messenger, and so she put a final stitch in the quilt and started down the mountain in search of the king. After a long search, she finally found him. The king's royal clothes were now in tatters, and his toes poked out of his boots. Yet his eyes glittered with joy, and his laugh was wonderful and thunderous. The quilt maker unfolded the king's quilt from her bag. It was so beautiful that hummingbirds and butterflies fluttered about. Standing on tiptoe, she tenderly wrapped it around him. "What's this?" cried the king. "As I promised you long ago," the woman said, "when the day came that you yourself were poor, only then would I give you a quilt." The king's great sunny laugh made green apples fall and flowers turn his way. "But I am not poor," he said. "I may look poor, but in truth my heart is full to bursting, filled with memories of all the happiness I've given and received. I'm the richest man I know." "Nevertheless," the quilt maker said, "I made this quilt just for you." "Thank you," replied the king. "I'll take it, but only if you'll accept a gift from me. There is one last treasure I have left to give away. All these years I've saved it just for you." And from his rickety, rundown wagon, the king brought out his throne. "It's really quite comfortable," the king said. "It's just the thing for long days of sewing." From that day on, the king often came to the quilt maker's house in the clouds. By day, the quilt maker sewed the beautiful quilts she would not sell. And at night, the king took them down to the town. There he searched out the poor and downhearted, never happier than when he was giving something away.